This is the You Are a Resilient Woman podcast with September Burton. I am a domestic abuse, stalking, and family court abuse survivor. I speak because I believe that there is a magic that happens when women heal together. For every woman who speaks, she empowers thousands of other women. Stand with me, speak with me, heal with me. Go to allihaveleftismyvoice.com to read my story.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please go to change.org/September Burton to sign my petition to help me hold an abuser accountable and get my children back.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Resilient Woman podcast. I'm your host, September Burton, and today I have with me Stefana Johnson. And Stefana sent me some information about her, and I just want to read through a little bit of it. She says, as a result of personal sexual trauma and abuse, she lived in shame, fear, and confusion until she was able to transform those scars into what she calls sacred wounds. Stefana, please explain, because I really want to learn how you transformed those scars into sacred wounds.
Yeah, this is everything to me because I lived in terror within my own self. Quick backstory, as a child, starting at 4, I was sexually abused. And the perpetrator came back when I was 12 and then had some other issues. And then at the time I was growing up, this is in the 70s, it is shameful to even, you're bad. It was very condemned to rat on anyone. And that's what a lot of that energy was. And I'm saying this because I've interviewed literally hundreds of people, men and women, that have been put in situations at a very young age that they were groomed. And then as the child's developing, their sense of identity is developing at every stage. There's developmental stages. And as they're developing, if they do not have a foundation of safety, security, their own sense of self, their own intuition has been stifled, you create this child who grows up to be an adult who doesn't know boundaries oftentimes. They give a lot of their power and energy away to others that do not have their best interest at heart. So it took me a long time to unravel this whole thing. I left home when I was 16, again, because that perpetrator came back into the household, and that was it. I was done with that. At that time, I could at least make a decision on my own, but I did it in a way that was running to something instead of running away from something, because at that point, I wasn't even confronting my own deep wounds of worthiness and feeling all the things that go with having your self-esteem just completely annihilated. So when I finally confronted it, now there's two times in my life that I confronted it. The first time was with my church. And when I said, this is what happened, immediately the chaplain said it was my fault. And I was 17 at the time. So in that moment, everything imploded within me, and all that I was directing outwardly, looking at, okay, something's wrong here. And then when I finally had enough feeling like, okay, this is safe, I need to tell someone, then they say it was my fault. It went straight inside to me. And then that did its insidious work on the internal piece of worse about you're not worthy and you're to blame, you're responsible for this, you're this very destructive, very deep wounds. So moving fast forward to my first child, because I buried it then from the time I was 17 until I was 35, I buried it. Mind you, even though it was buried, I was operating off of that on a subconscious level. The people I chose to be with, the men I chose to marry. So a marriage that I had was to a man who was just very bad. I had a police restraining order on him. Just wow. And as I'm thinking back, I'm like, how did that even happen? But at that time, that woman that I was blamed herself. She was the bad girl. She was doing things wrong. She didn't get the milk. She left the milk carton out. She did bad things. She didn't have the cows perfectly clean. She deserved to have her arm broken. She deserved to have, and that right there is what I want everyone to hear. I know that piece of being in that shame, blame, regret, guilt. I remember hearing in my mother's voice in my head, "You made your bed, baby, you lie in it." And that repeated over and over and over again for 2 years until I could get out of this abusive marriage. Now, I also had a church that defended the person and really protected them. It was it's very patriarchal, and sometimes we're living in that right now. We see this. It's a very patriarchal, protected society, culture that we live in. And as a result, oftentimes men, and I'm not saying women don't abuse men, but for my circumstance, I had men abusing me, and that was my circumstance and my situation. So with that, that man was specifically protected by the church. And so it took me a very long time, and the church continued to blame me, make me the reason why, and that I wasn't a good wife. I wasn't a good person. So that continued to spiral me down until literally one moment of coming back from the church, and we were driving back to the airport, and my husband at the time was driving so fast with his intention to kill me and kill us. He didn't care. He was just crazy. Better to be dead than divorced. And I remember rolling down the window and looking out, trying to jump out of the window. And we made it to the airport, and that was it. I walked my own direction, and from there got a police restraining order, and the rest is, as they say, history. I didn't begin to start healing and unraveling this until my first son was born, which is amazing to me. But it's that sad that we as a culture do not allow for women to speak up about their wounds. This Me Too movement has perhaps uncovered a lot, but it hasn't opened up a safe venue to speak about it, to get the healing that we need, to get into a safe space for women to be empowered. I'm wondering who is afraid of the woman being empowered, right? Because when, you know, God help them, when a woman says no more, there is no stopping that woman, especially if she's a mama. And that's what happened for me. When my first son was born, the first perpetrator came into my house with his fiance, stood there holding my infant baby. And in that moment, something snapped. I saw things for what they were. And if I wasn't willing to defend myself, by God, I was going to defend that child. I took my baby, and that was it. I wrote a letter to my family. I said, I would never pretend again. I will never come to Christmas. I will never come to holidays. I will never. And it's funny, I don't recall ever sending that letter, but that's a whole other thing. And again, that's the piece of this unraveling. So I give you all of that to let you know that those wounds have made me who I am today, and I am far stronger and far more resilient and far more, my goodness, I am my own best friend. I am my own greatest ally. And what is so beautiful is the definition of a hero is having courage for two, having love enough for two. For yourself and another and others. You have to have it for yourself first. That's a true hero. Not someone who sacrifices themselves constantly for another. You have to have, it's enough love for yourself and another. And when I understood that and really understood that energy of a warrior, that it's a calm place. It's a place of wholeness and harmony. That's when I began to truly heal, because it reversed this combativeness. It reversed this revenge and judgment. And as a result of so much work with regards to healing, I had been through, you name it, I went through trying to heal. And forgiveness is a big piece. When there's a lot, you need to forgive them. And that in itself can be so dangerous when it's misunderstood. It is not about forgiving that perpetrator. Justice absolutely should be done, but the forgiveness must happen for you, for yourself. Forgiveness for the misunderstanding and for the misassumptions that you make about yourself because of those circumstances and those situations, because your entire life from that moment on is defined. And it's so interesting. So what I would say, if I could talk to that woman, I don't know if that I could have heard it, but I was so scared. I was completely terrified. And the anger and the hate that was in me for the situation and for, yes, the person, was so inverted. That was directed internally. And that is wrong. It is absolutely unworkable. And I understand it. I understand the hate and the anger that gets internalized. And it's the first thing you have to get a handle on, because you have to stop turning that inward. You are not to blame. It is not your fault, and you are not alone. I will repeat that over and over again to people who are willing to hear that, because we've been made to think it is. And that's when we cannot heal ever. The moment you can shift out of that and say, maybe there's a different possibility. Maybe there's some other possibility. Even if you're not quite ready to shift it out and turn the light on, you can think maybe there's a different possibility here. And when that happens, then you can start uncovering. And that's when the warrior work really begins, and your sacred wounds become your soul's light and power and beauty. I'm 51 now. And look, I'll be honest. There's no regret at this point. It is what it is, and it will always be. And do I have to continue working on this every day? Even though I rise above it and I'm whole, and I've helped and I've spent 10,000 hours helping others heal. So at this point, I've invested time in myself as well as others. But you have to be okay that this is you, and this is, and that you are still a masterpiece and a work in progress.
I love that.
So that wholeness comes from knowing that you are not defined by those wounds, those circumstances, those situations. And that's so vital to get. We're not defined by our ex-husbands and all of that. I didn't let you get a word in, Edward.
No, I am loving everything that you're saying, and our stories mirror each other. I'm in shock right now, because as you're speaking, there are so many things. Like, I was at 10 years old, I was told it was my fault. I sat down with a psychologist, a male psychologist, and he literally told me it was my fault. And I'm 10 years old. But I lived my life staying away from therapy, staying away from psychologists because of that experience. And now it's only been in the last year and a half that I finally started to trust therapists again. And thank God I have, because they're the ones who really opened my eyes to the type of abuse that I've been experiencing, and educating me and making sure, getting me to a place where I won't repeat that. So I've been writing notes as you've been talking. There's so many things, I just want to talk about so many different things. But one of the things that you said that really struck out to me is talking about who is it that's afraid of women finding their power, because there is an agenda of silencing women. And the more I speak, the more women trust me with their stories. And it is insane. It's not just partner spousal abuse. It's at work, being told that if you get passed over for a promotion, you have to be silent about it. Don't speak about it because that's going to look bad on you. And there is an agenda of silencing women, and it's disgusting. And that's part of the whole point of this podcast is, no, I'm done. Nope, no more silence for me. I'm done.
In the churches, in the therapists, a lot of that patriarchal. Unfortunately, I've met a couple. Most women that I've worked with have been okay, but there's been a few where it is they've bought into that agenda. So that is a fair warning. And in the book that I wrote, Finding Joy Beyond Trauma, I interviewed over 170 people and got deep detail stories. And the correlations are just... I truly thought I was alone. And just as you're saying, I can't believe how many mirrored. One in three have been sexually abused and have that piece of trauma that's then buried. And so one in three, really? You're not alone. And we've got this perpetuating, hidden components going on. Right.
So what I would like to cover, two things. One, you talked about how you blamed yourself, how everything, you didn't keep the house clean enough. And that was my story. I absolutely believed in this last relationship. I absolutely believed that if I was just better to him, he would stop abusing me and we could be happy together. And it was insane. So I'd like to talk about that for a moment. And then the other thing I'd like to talk about is when you talk about boundaries. What exactly do you mean by boundaries, and how can you set those boundaries for yourself and make sure that they stay firm?
Yeah, awesome questions. And so I'll start with the first one. When you've been told at a very young age, I believe this comes from a young age in development stage, that inner child, because we're all developing. Now that I have my children and I've watched them grow, and at each stage, I remember when my son was 4, I was so overprotective of him. And I wouldn't let anyone touch him. Babysit, none of it, because I was so hypervigilant. And this idea of the just watching through I have two boys, their development, and then doing the inner child work. When you are born, the only person, as an infant, the only way you get your needs met is to cry and or communicate, right? So someone has to meet your needs or you will not survive. If those needs don't get met, there is a foundational piece that is not going to develop in you. Now, go to the 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, up to 6 years old. And that's when your next level of your being is being developed. And that's where you start identifying who you are and that, oh, I'm different than mommy. Oh, I have my own desires and choices. And if that's not developed, that inner voice is squashed. And then you're meeting other people's needs from that moment on. So that's developed innately. And I still have this at 51 where I'm trying to meet everybody else's needs. So I've gone in and done that inner child work, and I've gone in and worked with my 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old self. And really worked with, that was the biggest catalyst for change for me when I went in and healed those pieces, because that was developmental, that it was my fault, that I'm responsible for this person's sexual needs, for his, whatever those needs were, for him to come to me. And a lot of times sexual predators don't even know what their real needs are. They were probably abused or had something, their developmental things were messed up. So then they're using it on you to either suppress you, oppress you, they're trying to get some need met. Mm-hmm. And they're just doing it in a really unhealthy way. That's a simplistic way to view it. But that is the truth of it. Everybody's trying to get a need met. Some are making it and they're doing it in an unhealthy way. Some do it through video games. Some do it through food. Some do it through porn. Some do it through rape. Some do it through murder. Some do it through politics. Some do it through whatever. So we have to understand that inner piece of ourselves fundamentally might not have gotten a hold of it. It might not be developed, but it can be. So you can develop this idea of what is it that I am really responsible for and that what I really need here. And being able to look at an environment in the present moment and say, wow, I have agreed to be a wife and a mom and take care of a house and take care of this. And these are my responsibilities. And I'm doing a pretty darn good job of that. This person comes in, kicks the dog, upsets, takes it out on the people in the environment. That's then goes right into the boundaries. Because then you start to see, wait a minute. I'm not the target here. It's just a random, you're just in the vicinity of that person's reality.
That's true.
It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
So your first job is to get your own sense of self and then establish an inner boundary. What you will and will not accept, what you will and will not be responsible for.
So how do you set those boundaries? How do you know? Because before he comes in and starts, you know, kicking the dog, for instance, or doing something like that, there had to have been signs before you even allowed him into your space. So how do you go rewind and go back to that point before you even allow him to get to that point?
Every situation is going to be different. I don't know the dynamic of your situation or generally speaking for people's situation, but I took martial arts after my first marriage and he took my arm behind my back and broke my arm. And I took martial arts after that to protect myself. It took me years to even be safe to be in martial arts without breaking down in tears because I'd always go into, it was like PTSD, right? Anybody attacking me, I'd go into fear and terror. This is what I learned in Aikido. And I became a highly ranked martial artist. The higher ranked you get, the smarter you get. You don't go in environments where there is someone who is going to attack you. Even though you could completely defend yourself, you don't go there. You don't attract them. You don't put yourself in situations or circumstances with someone who would do that to you.
That's fascinating. And again, our stories mirroring each other because when I got, same thing, my arm was pinned behind my back. It didn't get broken, but I did have to go get x-rays done on it and things. But, and then after the relationship ended, I took 20 weeks of private self-defense lessons. And so I had a self-defense instructor, just me and him. He was like 6'4", like 300 and some pounds. Huge guy, but I did the same thing. Like I wouldn't open up. I wouldn't really get into the lessons because it was too scary for me. It was terrifying to be put into.
Did he understand?
Yes, he did. He was very compassionate and empathetic. He was a good person. But yeah, so I just find everything that you're saying fascinating. So we've talked about how you healed, and then I would like to, if you're open to it, talk about where you are today. What does your life actually look like today?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. It took me, so I did a better job on my next marriage afterwards. And so I was married 17 years after my very abusive marriage where I had to call the police and have a restraining order. I did a better job and I have worked really hard because my children they're the foundation of who I am. And they make, I've learned so much being a mother and so what I will say is this, because I don't want to say come clean, I didn't know that I should have told my husband that I was sexually abused. And so he did not know that I was sexually abused for the first 6 years of our marriage. And he only found out when that perpetrator came and held our baby. But he did know during our marriage that I was terrified of sex and would go into convulsive crying after sex. And I hid it though. And he just thought, oh, maybe that's just her thing. We never talked about it. That's another thing that if you don't have just even choosing that partner, I was still not whole. I was not in harmony with myself and my, anyway. I was in a marriage for 17 years. It wasn't all bad. He was not physically abusive. Verbally, yes. Emotionally, yes. And that is, again, my piece on that I didn't know myself. And I wish that I could tell my younger self that it's okay to be alone. It is okay to not be with someone. They will not, you don't have to have someone to protect you. You don't have to always be in a relationship. I wish I had someone to tell me that and to hold me and to be my friend when I needed someone, because I went to the solution of being married. That's why I was married. I've been married 3 times, but that was like in me. Oh, I have to be married. And that's crazy. So now, 17 years of marriage, 3 years ago, actually 4.5 years ago, I'll backtrack. In 2012, I left him with my children. 3 and 6 years old, I got in the car and I left. I was like, no, I'm done. I did it in a stronger, little underhanded way. Basically said, oh, I have a job on the West Coast. I need to go. You stay here. And I just left. I didn't want to have, okay. I don't need to go into all the other details with that. But the bottom line is, I got myself out of there and my kids out of there in 2012. We tried to make it work about 8 months later. So he came to the Pacific Northwest from Texas. We try to make it work again, mainly because I wanted the family. I wanted my kids to have a family. Same old. I had been doing so much work on myself, but more so I'd been doing work as a woman and as a mom. So I didn't quite have it down yet. Fast forward 5 years. So it's in, this is 2015, 2016, 2017. So there's a lot of stuff and it takes time. You can't expect this to be a quick fix. It takes time. And I believe if you stay present and if you love yourself first, you will be getting the right answers that you need and you will take the next right step, and you have to trust that. I will tell you one thing that I do and I have all my clients do now. The moment you wake up, the moment that you are aware of being aware, say, I love you. And if you can't say, I love you in the mirror to your own eyes yet, then start with a little tiny piece, something about yourself that you love. 10 years ago, I hated myself. Now, I am honestly my most beloved friend. I'm my own first best client. I'm my own best person to take. And as a result, I have so much more to give. And this is what I really hope everyone hears. You are not selfish when you take yourself first and love yourself first and do the most loving things that you need to do for you. And if that means packing a suitcase or nothing and getting in the car and leaving, by God, do that. If it means getting your kids and getting out of there, do that. If it means getting a police restraining order, do that. If it means going to the person that is there with you and trying to work it out because that's what's calling to you and feeling, yes, I think there's something here and I'm willing because it is the most loving thing that I can do. And I know that in the deepest place of my soul, that it is the most loving thing I can do for myself to look at this man, look at this person, look at this woman, doesn't matter, this partner of mine who is clearly, they have their own issues. It's not about you, which is also true. It's not about you that they're abusing you. It has nothing to do with you. It's their own stuff. And if for us to take it on, we're just perpetuating the lie. So you must start from yourself first. What's the most loving thing I can do? Okay, right now I need some water and I really just need a good night's sleep and feel safe. So you go do that. Yeah. You go find someone, you hear a podcast, you reach out to someone that you trust. And if you don't have people you can reach out that you trust, you need to call on your higher power, your future self that is holding you powerful and there for you. My future self was there. I remember asking for help here. And I remember calling, I was literally on my deathbed because I was dying from the inside out. And my dad was my best friend. He was killed years ago, but he was my best friend and someone I could always talk to, but I never told him about the sexual abuse. And when my mother found out, she said, the first thing she said was, "You're a liar, aren't you?" That was hard. But then she came back a month later and said, "If your dad knew, he would have killed him." And so that was another piece of, it's your fault. That was another thing of, it's your fault. It's a blame thing. So you have to really watch for others who don't understand, because they can say things that will put you right back in that blame piece. And so sometimes you have to be very protective of even who you ask for support. And the reason I'll just wrap up with this is that you and I both have experienced this. Sometimes help is not help. It's just more betrayal. So you must get really internally clear with yourself and do that loving piece, because I do believe best. The harmonious, the place that's in harmony within you, and you know that. Maybe you don't recognize it sometimes, but you can connect to that, and you have to, because then you can recognize, oh, I do need some help outside of this, but I also recognize that not everyone is the right person to help. So that's really key, especially after what you just said.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've said so many things that just ring clear so perfectly. It has nothing to do with you. The abuse that you're experiencing, it has absolutely nothing to do with you. It's about them. It's about their pain. It's about their trauma. And they're using you.
And you don't have to fix them.
Yes, it is not your
job to fix them.
Yes.
You can love them too, but love, that's why you have to be the hero. Love yourself first and love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo! We got into some juicy stuff here. Oh my goodness.
Right. And I also love how you talked about be protective of who you ask for support. There was one person that I talked to and was seeking support from who literally just started laughing at me. And I was like, all right, I think I'm going to get off the phone now. But you have to be very careful, because you know your truth. And you have to be able to stand strong in your truth. And no matter what anybody says, whether they believe you or not, your truth is your truth. Yeah, it's a lot of very powerful things that you said today, Stefana. Thank you so much.
Yes, I hope anyone who needs to hear this gets to hear it and know that I'm here. And I want to say that I make myself available, and I do, but I also have my own energetic boundaries. I have the free happiness assessment that anyone can go and get. And if you put in those basics, that is such a good start of where, how to develop your boundaries, how to do the self-care piece, how to look at just fundamental pieces.
Yeah.
So that you are back in harmony with your own true resonance, that soul, that sacred, beautiful you. Yeah.
Thank you. I feel like we could go on and on.
I know, I'm like,
very profound, very impactful. I think this will inspire a lot of women to really reassess where they're at. So thank you.
I'm really proud of you doing this, and I want to honor you. I know I talked a lot, so I didn't allow you to speak, but there's a lot that you clearly have to share. So I hope that you'll just speak. And if you need someone just to ask questions and you speak at this point, because I know you have some things to share, then do for sure. Because this is that voice that you're talking about, that you're standing and you're taking the stand here and saying, I'm this voice, I'm putting this out there, is going to be profound, and the right people will hear it. Thank you. I honor you for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And going off of that just a little bit, I do have a petition on change.org. If you go to change.org/September Burton, you will find my petition. I ask everybody who listens to this podcast, please go sign that petition. Please. You'll learn a little bit about my story. And if you want to know more about my story, all I have left is myvoice.com. Thank you for listening. If you're in danger, call 911 and your local women's shelter. Get yourself safe so you can begin to heal. And when you're ready, reach out. You have a tribe. You have support. Find me at allihaveleftismyvoice.com or on any social channel as September Burton.